Hi, everyone, and welcome to Keyframe, the Geek Show's dedicated animation podcast. My name's Rob, and joining me today are Tucky.
Hello.
I forgot your name for a second there. Shh, don't tell anybody. And Andrew.
Hey, hello.
So, how are you guys today?
Decent.
Decent?
What's for wear?
Hang on. When you say decent, Andrew, I assume you mean you're wearing clothes.
Yeah, of course. Like, yeah.
Isn't that what they used to say in the old days? Are you decent?
Ah, Christ. Well, it's a bit too chilly to go in the nude.
You're not tough enough to go commando outside, are you?
Say, so in this weather, you're not tough enough to go commando inside. The snow's returned, and it's weird because when the show gets put out like a week later, it'll probably be blistering sunshine. They'll be listening, going, "How old's this?"
Yep.
Probably. The weather changes every 3 days.
What snow? I don't remember snow. I was born in the '90s. Anyway, we have news, oodles of news. Things have been happening. All sorts of things have been happening. But I think we've got to start off with the biggest news of all: Nicolas Cage is finally going to be Superman.
Get in, Cage.
Yeah, but the thing is, there's loads of people listening now who are thinking, what, when did this happen? What happened to Henry Cavill?
I mean, to be fair, I would prefer Nicolas Cage to Henry Cavill, but, you know, at least I won't have to digitally edit out his moustache.
There's a guy on an old cheap computer who did a better job and did it for like 300 quid rather than millions of dollars. But we won't go there. We won't at all. We won't even mention that, although we just did. But yeah, Nicolas Cage is finally going to be Superman. Nothing has happened to Henry Cavill. I should remind our listeners, we are an animation podcast. So obviously it's not going to be in like a major Hollywood movie. So
yet.
What's it going to be in? Tucky.
Just talk down the movie more. It's what it deserves at the moment. It's self-aware meme bit, and it knows it is. And the fact it's got Nicolas Cage involved somehow, it gets more baffling every week.
I'd watch it.
It's Teen Titans, right? And the thing is, Teen Titans has this whole thing of like, to be good.
Is this Teen Titans Go? He's going to be Superman in that.
Teen Titans Go to the movies.
Oh, good. So that means that Nicolas Cage is going to be doing his best Ric Flair impression as Superman.
Woo!
Yeah. The thing is, Teen Titans, like, as we all know, in, like, the early 90s when we had, like, Toonami, they were all dark and that, and it had serious plot line. And then
There were some episodes of Teen Titans that had no serious plot line whatsoever.
Yeah, but it was funny. It was genuinely funny, where it actually feels kind of forced.
Yeah. And the thing is, they ended it with the movie Titans in Tokyo, which finally had the couple getting together. That everybody's favourite couple at that point was Starfire and Robin, and everybody wanted Starfire and Robin to become an item. And they did in Titans in Tokyo, didn't they?
Oh, but everyone wanted Beast Boy and Robin to get together.
Sorry, what was that?
Beast Boy and Robin, I thought that was a go-to couple.
No.
Wrong part of the internet.
Yeah, wrong part of the internet. Actually, the other couple, the other couple was actually Beast Boy and Raven.
Yeah, from what I remember, that was in the actual, you know, that series. Like,
I always found that a bit weird. Like, Beast Boy and Raven? Really?
Well,
Beast Boy and Terror.
That isn't new.
Yeah, but the thing is, if you go by the original cartoons, Beast Boy and Terror, yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Actually, that was played on Heavy, actually, and they were going to go somewhere with it, but then they didn't.
Yeah. And Cyborg never actually hooked up with anybody in any way, shape, or form. Raven had a bit of a thing, I think, for Robin, but didn't go anywhere near him because of Starfire's obvious liking of him. All I can say to that is, happy Blothog. I remember...
That's just bringing back memories.
Well, that's the thing. It was good memories of the old one, and then they changed it.
The old one was pretty. I liked it.
Yeah, but then
the new one became internet humor and
bad internet humor.
Well, that's the thing. I watch it because I've got Cartoon Network and I've got kids, and Gareth absolutely loves it. And that's their audience, like 5-year-olds who like silly humor. And
is it the same thing? The Powerpuff Girls reboot? They just filled it with air.
That's a whole different kettle of fish. The Powerpuff Girls,
I suppose, but it's the same sort of trope, isn't it? Like, somebody gets brought back a couple of years later.
Yeah, but here's the thing, right? At the time the Teen Titans were around, there were so many amazing cartoons that we had here in the West. And people just kind of went, oh yeah, we've got those as well. I mean, let's put it this way. We were reviewing a particular graphic novel on 4Panel a while ago called The Immortal Iron Fists.
Yeah.
And Andrew, when he's talking about this, I said, that sounds like Shaolin Showdown. And he goes, yeah, that it's exactly like Shaolin Showdown. One of my favorite cartoons of like my childhood. I mean, Om was a great character.
I like Shaolin Showdown.
Hey, I love Shaolin Showdown. But then he carried on and said, now it's starting to sound like Jackie Chan Adventures, which again is a great cartoon from around the same time period. And think about it, when you start listing them off, you had Shaolin Showdown, Jackie Chan Adventures, Teen Titans, Samurai Jack. I think Avatar was around the same time as well, wasn't it? Or just after?
Yeah,
bit after. But this is the thing, all of that happening around the same time is like a mini golden age of cartoons for the West. And we didn't even see it.
Yeah.
Thing is, we didn't even see it for what it was.
I mean, this was a good couple of years after the late 90s, and that when the Fox Kids and Jetix, you had like the Marvel Action Hour, which is like the animated series like Spider-Man, Fantastic Four, Iron Man.
Yeah.
It kind of goes off the back of that a little bit as well, because I think it was a couple of years after that finished.
Yeah.
Oh, wasn't the late 90s like when it was airing?
Yep.
It had already finished. It was just re-airing.
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of these were like very late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah, that's when the first aired, like Shaolin Showdown, Samurai Jack, and Swish Lee were first airing around then. But even then, there were like rebroadcast re-airings like, of other really good cartoons and Cartoon Network and Fox Kids at the time that you could switch the channel and like you could spend all day watching these cartoons. And
it was when Cartoon Network was doing all their experimenting, which is why they had shows like Johnny Bravo, which I love Johnny Bravo, I've got to say.
I wish they'd bring that back.
Nah, the misogyny doesn't hold up in this day.
But the thing is,
he was always a comical character. Like most of the characters, I mean, it's one of them things changing times. I mean, people look at Friends and they're offended by things that happened in Friends now, and it's like, well, it's been and done.
Yeah,
you know, it is what it is. You can't rewrite the history books because you're mildly inconvenienced.
Yeah, but that was the thing. That was the whole point of Johnny Bravo, was showing that misogyny didn't get you anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that
but he hit over the head with a purse a lot.
Hey, yeah, he got beat up a lot by women because
the point.
it was all about how the misogyny just didn't work anymore, and he was basically stuck in the past, and he had to move on. And this is the thing that he moved on so far. He went to Bollywood. Do not watch that. Right, that is trippy as hell. It's weird as anything.
I've been trying to find that just to watch it. I've seen clips of it on YouTube, but it's very difficult to find.
I mean, don't forget, that was also the time of Cow and Chicken and various things like that as well.
Oh, Cow and Chicken got away with so much as well. Like, a lot of their crude humour went kind of under the radar.
Yep. Anyway, how did we get here from Nicolas Cage? Well, that's kind of obvious.
Nicolas Cage from Teen Titans Go. It's just like he's been announced alongside others for the Teen Titans Go movie.
Yeah,
which promises to be full of memes, but he's up with rapper Lil Yachty.
Who?
Lil Yachty.
Who?
Is the Green Lantern.
Who?
And singer-songwriter Halsey.
Again, who?
Jesus Christ.
See, this is the thing. I'm reading the article, and it's casting today. Now it says rapper Lil Yachty, and in brackets, who? One question mark, and then Halsey, who? Two question marks. And it's like he's reading the exact script of it.
I'm just saying who and who, because I honestly don't know who the hell these people are.
These are just names to me.
They're going to step up because Nicolas Cage is going to up their careers.
Hang on. So
the careers, up the careers. He's going to destroy them just because he's Nicolas Cage. He's just like, oh no, I'm better than you. He can probably be a better rapper. He can be a better singer-songwriter than any of them.
That's not how Nicolas Cage rolls. You do not understand Nicolas Cage, Andrew. You need to do more Nicolas Cage studies, but don't go too far. Okay.
Ghost Rider.
No, you shouldn't go too far with Nicolas Cage studies because you could become Nicolas Cage. Okay.
Oh man.
You need to be careful when studying the Cage Meister, you know?
I'd like to think that somewhere in Cambridge, Oxford, they've got a Nicolas Cage studies.
Have you not seen Community?
I think we've spent enough time on Teen Titans Go.
Yes. I don't know. Is it such a thing as too much time when it comes to Nicolas Cage?
No, there isn't. There's not enough time in the world. But anyway, let's move on to the other big news, which is Hinamaru Sumo. We've got the first teaser.
If you can call it a teaser, it's one of them really hyped up in your face promotions. Yeah. Kind of like announcing it's here, it's coming in October, which is really great because, you know, what else are you going to do in the cold, cold months?
I am really curious how they're going to do this show because there's several things that they need to take care of with this. Number one, sumo is Japan's national sport. And so they really need to, I reckon this is going to have a massive production budget.
And so it should.
Because Hinamaru Sumo, I've not seen a sports manga in recent years that has touched as many of the Japanese people as this one has.
And the thing with the narrative of it is, it's that it's not only like an underdog story, it's Japan's like journey back to relevance in the sport because Sumo has been overtaken by I think it's like Malaysian wrestlers and Mongolian like wrestlers all these and, like foreign wrestlers have came in and made the sport theirs. And Japan's always had this like need for a proper Japanese Yokozuna.
Yeah.
And this story's the telling of how like a little Japanese kid, a little of all, you know, sizes, like works his way from the bottom and like, you know, he's done it through hard work, grit, determination, absolutely zero luck in it.
Yeah.
He's working his way up and fighting the bigger people.
And this is and one that's, of the
that's,
things.
That's going to be an interesting way to see how they manage with that as well.
Well, I mean,
it's the Japanese Rocky.
Yeah, it is the Japanese Rocky. Yeah. And I reckon that if they made this into a live action movie, it would. The thing is, the Japanese Rocky isn't this. We all know what the Japanese Rocky is.
Yeah.
Do you know what it is, Andrew?
Hajime and Oipo.
No. Come on, man. Hey.
I said it would be that.
Call yourselves anime fans. Ashita no Joe.
All right. I would have called Hajime and Oipo.
No, before Hajime and Oipo, there was Ashita no Joe. Tomorrow's Joe. And that is the Japanese Rocky. And if you get a chance to read the manga, read it. It's phenomenal. If you get a chance to watch the anime adaptation, watch it. It's iconic. They've made live-action adaptations of it, which are very, very well done. You know that scene of the guy sitting in a corner on a stool, all washed out?
Yeah.
That's from Ashita no Joe.
How many times? I thought it was from every pub in Sunderland.
Yeah, but the thing is, they probably nicked it from Ashita no Joe.
But it's going up to some lonely washed-up bloke in the corner of a pub like, hey, mate, you're copying off an anime, I know.
Something the entire football team.
Yeah. But that's what I'm saying. How many times has that scene appeared in other anime?
It's not just anime. It's popular media and everything.
Exactly.
That's popular media in real life.
So, yeah. Ashita no Joe is the Japanese Rocky. But this could be the Japanese Sumo Rocky.
Yeah. Because obviously it's the same trope, the same story, you know. Rising to the top.
Not really. With all the sports things, it's always the same story. Rise to the top, be the champion, be the best. That's it. But it's the niggly bits of those sports stories. That's where the interest is. With Hajime no Ippo, for example, he's the son of a fisherman, and he then becomes a boxer. He learns how to do the Dempsey roll, and then he basically punches his way to the top from the gym that he's in. With Ashita no Joe, it's basically a kid who basically is from like a really poor background who finds a way out of the slums through boxing.
That's every youth boxer in the world.
Yeah.
You say them everywhere. It's boxing clubs. And it's like, you know, the youth have got nothing to do. Tories have shut down the youth clubs and that. And, you know, the home entertainment's not doing anything. Send them to some strange, over-the-top, roided-up guy and he can learn to fight.
Yeah, but this is the thing. That's why Ashita no Joe is more the Japanese Rocky than say, Hinamaru Zumo. Although Hinamaru is an orphan, isn't he? I think in the manga, they actually said it best.
He's not an orphan. He knows his mum.
No, his mum's dead.
Yeah.
That's what an orphan is.
It's kind of her cheering him on.
Yeah, both his parents are dead. That's why he's an orphan. This is the thing. They actually explain it in the manga the best, I think. There's nothing more glorious than seeing a little guy throw a big guy.
Yeah, I suppose that is. It is always good to see that, because obviously...
Think about it like this,
Andrew. Doesn't Japanese culture have a massive thing for underdogs?
Yeah, but think about it like this. If Tucky's five-year-old boy suddenly threw him, how funny would that be? How much would you be happy about that? if you saw that, Andrew...
Very funny.
The thing is, Andrew, if you saw that, you would never forget it, would you?
Probably wouldn't forget it.
I'd change his cereal.
I'd take what he's having. He's had his Weetabix, has he? Anyway. What else have we got, Tucky?
Gunsmith Cats are getting a redo release.
Yeah. Talk about left field.
Well, no, I mean, go back a few shows, we were talking about what we would like to see rebooted, and I think Gunsmith Cats was in that list.
Hang on, does that mean people are listening to us? I'm scared now, Tucky.
Well, no, I keep saying that there's some force out there. I mean, are executives listening to us? We're still to see the cultural Cat Nuku Nuku remake.
All-purpose cultural Cat Girl Nuku Nuku. If you do remake that and you want an English dub, then we can suggest people, you know, we'll happily join in as well. I'm sure
Helen McCarthy still got the names of the original cast.
Yes.
On a phone book.
Yes, we can get in touch with Helen McCarthy, get the original cast together. Or we can find a different scouse/ who would be happy to do the role for that particular character. Because really, the world needs more of Madame Akiko.
Jesus Christ!
Yeah, Andrew, you're new. You don't know about the thoroughly British dubbing of all-purpose Cat Girl.
It was glorious.
I've only heard 5 seconds of this. I'm already incredibly disturbed for life.
I'd say it was the first and possibly only attempt at doing a proper British dub of an anime.
Using regional accents.
Yeah, and it was when they showcased it at an event, I was there and I froze when I heard the accents. So I was like, that's just not right, but it's kind of glorious. I want this.
Did you ever find the VHS for that?
Yeah, it's on eBay.
It is a similar thing. Like, I have wondered for years and that when it comes to, you know, the whole dubbing process and that, is that you only hear... American sort of accents, and we do hear the odd English accent as well, the Cockneys.
Yeah, it's always Cockneys because London is apparently England.
I can tell you historically that is very far from right.
Anyway, we're talking.
A story for another day.
Yeah, we're talking Gunsmith Cats getting a reboot, which is it's a surprise. I mean, it's a reboot over year rather than a full on reboot, isn't it?
I believe so, yeah.
Here's the thing. Gunsmith Cats, when was it out? Mid-90s, wasn't it?
I've only seen a couple of episodes myself. I'm more familiar with, obviously, what it was based off, because it was based off a Riding Man.
I was going to talk about Riding Bean in a second, but we'll come to Riding Bean in a bit, okay? But Gunsmith Cats, because you got...
1991 to 1997.
Was that the manga or the anime?
That was the manga. The sequel series was like 2004-2008. I'm just looking up the anime. Where are we? Yeah, the over years were like 95-96.
Yeah, because it's Kenichi Sonoda, and there's several things that Kenichi Sonoda likes. He likes fast cars, he likes his guns, he likes his women, and he likes to put all of that together in his stories. And so you ended up with Gunsmith Cats, you ended up with stuff like Bubblegum Crisis and Bubblegum Crash. You had Galforce, various things like that. The thing is, he's pretty iconic when you get right down to it, because Gunsmith Cats got a lot of people into anime, especially in the West, because you had two characters, Lin Minmay and Rally Vincent, and the action was set in a city that was American.
Yeah, because the characters' names were actually taken from like American TV shows at the time.
Yeah. And as you said, Andrew, it was a spin-off of the original Riding Bean. And there were two vehicles when I first got into proper anime and understood what anime actually was. There were two vehicles that I always wanted. Number one was Kaneda's bike from Akira.
Yeah.
And number two was the Bean Bandit's car because it could drive sideways.
Yeah. I've only seen the odd episodes and clips from these because it's very difficult to find, like, you know, Kunsum of Cats and Riding Bean, legitimately. I've only managed to encounter very little of these things, but, like, over the years and times that I have seen these things, and I can only imagine how iconic they must have been for people growing up to have originally watched these and that. And then to hear that there's a reboot and that, of Kunsum of Cats.
Yeah.
Very nice. I like it. I'd watch it.
Riding Bean was one of those ones that flew under a lot of people's radars, even though they were fans of Gunsmith Cats, because Riding Bean is where Rally Vincent first appears. Yeah, she was working as a police officer at the time, and she was on the police force that was trying to catch the Bean Bandit, because Bean Bandit was actually a courier, the best courier in the business. And one of the other police officers, he basically blew a good portion of the police budget on a really fast car, a Shelby GT500, Shelby Cobra GT500, in order to try and catch the Bean Bandit. The other thing was, why did you call him the Bean Bandit?
Because he knew that in the future, Rowan Atkinson would come up with an amazing character. And he knew there'd be crossover fan fiction.
Well, as much as that, I've had so many people speculating over the years and saying to me, maybe he's called the Bean Bandit because in a past life he was some kind of outlaw cowboy who had a real fondness for beans.
It's a bit of a stereotype.
Yeah. Like for a while, and that is, it confused me, and that, cause I thought it was pronounced ban because I thought it was based on the word banshee. It's because obviously, and that is, banshee just means fairy spirit.
Yeah, but banshee's a female.
Yeah, it is a female, yes, but
Bean Bandit was
a lot of these things get into the likes of the East, and that is sometimes that they can get lost in a lot of translation and that. But
Bean Bandit is
say, I like that word. I'm going to name something after it.
Yeah, Bean Bandit is definitely not female.
I know. It's just obviously I'm just saying some of these things can be lost in translation when they try to deal these things.
That chin as well.
Yeah, I would love to see a reboot of Riding Bean, but I'm happy with the reboot of Gunsmith Cats.
You might it might happen. I mean, this unknown force listening in may make your wish come true.
No, because if you are listening and you want to make my wish come true, then reboot of Konjiki no Gashbell.
And you can just hear like thinking in the background going,
Trust me, if you do a reboot of Konjiki no Gashbell, or Zatchbell as it was called in the West for some reason, you know, apparently they're not allowed to say the word gash.
Yeah.
Is that like the Zach Bell?
Zatchbell, Zatchbell, yeah.
Gashbell.
That one was actually, it's weird, and it's the one with the booby song. The Italian guy who basically he's for some reason he's a sex symbol and all he does is sing about boobs.
Fantastic.
There you go, mysterious listeners. Rob wants some golden gash.
Oh yes.
There's no golden gash, it's just Konjiki no Gashbell. There's no gold about it. or a more up to date and more condensed version of Yu Yu Hakusho.
I would so watch that.
You and just about every other anime.
I love the original so much in that, but it's not just that. From what I do remember of it, it kind of ended and the manga went a fair bit on after it. The manga covered a little bit more of the final arc than the actual anime did. That's why I would like to see a full-on reboot of it that would finish it.
Yep. Yes, it would. So, yeah, there are two there that could do very, very well, I reckon. So anyway,
Hakusho definitely, especially with the success of Dragon Ball Super has had.
Yep. Shall we move on?
Yeah, to Netflix. on all Netflix. Netflix. But it's Netflix in Japan, actually, at the moment. These are the rollouts that we're probably going to see in a year's time, probably to come around Christmas, in fact, because they're doing this whole thing where people's, like, they've got records of people's viewing and how people might now view their shows. And they're trying a new system in anime where you can pick the episode that you want, and then it'll give you an option for you just to watch the best scenes of that anime.
Okay.
And this is just like fresh off the presses news at the moment. And apparently they've tried it out with Shigeki no Soma, where I think it was like the omelette with the filled full of rice, like the curry omelette rice thing. And apparently that's a big scene for that. So instead of watching through, you know, the plot, the character development and everything, get straight to your curry rice.
Yep.
when you want to, the option will be there for you just to get straight to the food porn right away.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting feature for Netflix to have. It's only going to be for the anime as well, which is going to be interesting, especially when you look at like what they've got coming up and what they've already got out. I'm excited to see what they do with Knights of Zodiac when they release it, because I think that's one that's due like a big resurgence.
Sorry, which one was that one?
The Knights of the Zodiac, Cynthia.
Oh, yes. I was just thinking, you know, you were talking about the big resurgence and we're talking about remakes just now.
Mm-hmm.
I was literally just thinking, you know, we could really do with a modern version of Ashita no Joe, because that came out, I think, was in the 70s, late 70s. You know, it had like a couple of follow-ups after that, but it was 1970 to 1971.
Well, they'd have to do it. The thing is, with them, though, they've got to do a little extra work to bring it up to the present day. It's what we're saying with Cardcaptor Sakura, because there's a lot of like posts up where there's like, this is how the old one was, where like the big phones, and now they're using like proper smartphones and everything, like little bits here and there, to bring it into like 2018. And it'll be interesting to see if they can actually bring something from the 70s into like modern day.
They did. Space Battleship Yamato.
That's exactly what I was going to mention, because that was a very, very efficient reboot. Is it a reboot or is it a remake?
It's a little from column A, a little from column B, because they went straight into movie form, didn't they? I think they did a series and then they went into movies after that. But Ashita no Joe, I think they could do a really good, really, really solid reboot of that. It's such a well-known story as well. But anyway, we're talking about Netflix. Sorry.
Yeah. No, that's all right. I'm just saying now that they're bringing out Baki for Netflix.
What, Grappler Baki?
Yeah. No, not the smoking kind.
Yeah, I know.
Grappler Baki, Lost Songs getting released on Netflix as well. It's quite good. Like we've always said, like Netflix at the moment, they're on top of the game with what they're bringing out. And I hope I don't know much about like this new feature just to go straight to the best scenes, because it seems kind of like the whole meme bait thing. Like, I've seen this meme, can I skip to it? Yeah, all right then. Yeah. They'll be bringing all the things that you can be able to download the episode to watch later as well.
Yeah, the thing that worries me about this best scenes bit is that everyone is going to focus on the best scenes. No one's going to actually watch the episode.
Certain people, they don't really care in this day and age. They need, like, snippets, about 2 minutes of meme, and then, like, yeah, I've watched the episode.
If that's how they watch anime, then don't come and talk to me, because I'm likely to tear things off you.
Oh, dear.
It's the way humanity's going. It's the evolution. And they said this ages
that's
ago
not
that
evolution.
As technology
that's
advances, we'll get lazier.
That's not evolution. That's devolution.
Yeah, well, it's the way things are going at the moment. Unless they make gyms free for people, I don't see anything changing. People just sit on the backside. Netflix has made it easy and accessible. Saying that, I'm one who uses Netflix. I'm sitting in the gym there, and I'm sitting watching anime, and nothing gives you a hard sweat. That's what I said, hard sweat there. nothing gives you the intense sweat as watching people walk past and think you're watching some dodgy cartoon porn.
Went from hard sweat to intense sweat, did it?
Yeah, it was. I was only on the cycle.
I'll bet.
Well, that's. I'm. Don't get us wrong. I'm glad of things like Crunchyroll and that I can have on my phone because you know me playlist gets a bit boring after a while. But I don't know. Just for people are lazy and people will just want like oh let's just see it in an image. If I can't see it in an image, I don't care. Yeah. And that's basically why memes are so popular, because people are just too lazy to have humor.
All right, anyway, moving on. Mob Psycho, wasn't it?
Yes, Mob Psycho has got a second season.
We knew it was going to happen. It's nice to have it confirmed. And they're going to be, if I remember rightly, isn't it going to be the broccoli bit now?
I don't know. I believe so, but It's good to actually see it get its second stage production.
Yeah.
Because it's one of them ones, because everybody was all like, oh, One Punch Man. And then out of nowhere, Mob Psycho. And it was like, oh, this is better than One Punch Man.
Yeah.
I mean, for some people, obviously there's people who like the memes of One Punch Man, but Mob Psycho for me was far superior. I mean, just the art style, the plots, the action sequences, it was so much better.
Yeah, I agree.
Second season, out of the moon.
I actually agree with you totally. Mob Psycho was a much better series than One Punch Man. One Punch Man, right at the beginning, was great. And all the way up to the fight between him and that space guy, it was great. Yeah? But after that, it just kind of plateaued and it stayed exactly the same. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I do get what you mean about it.
And it's never actually improved. It's got different characters in. I mean, there's the Garo arc now with the human monster and everything like that. But it's still kind of at that plateau where it's just doing its thing and that's it. It's not pushing itself in any direction. Whereas Mob Psycho felt like it just kept pushing at the boundaries and pushing at the boundaries and wanting to be better.
It definitely did. It's one of my personal favorites. It's won God knows how many awards now.
The other reason why I like Mob Psycho is because it's one's art style that's in there. It's not the artwork that's done by was it Yusuke Murata who did I Shield 21. It's not his artwork that's been re-envisioned by Yusuke Murata. It's his own artwork that's on display. His own character designs that are on display in the anime series, and I really like that.
Apparently, they were doing like experimental production and actually used oil paintings as well.
Yeah.
And that, I found that that's fascinating. I mean, we spoke about that Van Gogh movie where every
Vincent. Yeah.
was a fantastic like oil painting, and it was all done in
just
Poland.
Don't, Tucky. Just don't. Because bloody, we knew Coco was going to win, but still, it hurts that Loving Vincent didn't even have a chance, man.
All it needed was by Disney. It's like, oh, hell.
Yeah, you slap a Disney label on that film and it's winning every single award under the sun. So, yeah. Let's take a break there while I recompose before I become angry. Like, that's not my natural state. So, yeah, we'll be back in a moment.
Hello. Do you like films? Well, wow, that's good. We're over the first hurdle. If you like films, and you also like podcasts, you should probably check out the Geek Show's only dedicated movie podcast, Cinema Eclectica. Well-staffed with a trained array of helper monkeys, we review all of the latest films every week, and do it reasonably well.
Welcome back, and now it's time for us to talk about the serious business of animation, and leading the charge this week is Tucky.
Yeah, straight in with one of the most unstoppable beasts of history, Godzilla.
Yep.
And once again, Netflix, cheers lads, or lasses, or unassigned genders, people, whatever. whoever works on the production side of it, thank you very much for bringing Godzilla into 2018. And this was Godzilla Planet of the Monsters, or Rise of the Monsters, or however they do it. This is actually part one.
Yeah, I've heard mixed things about this. I've not seen it yet. I've been planning on watching it, but I've heard very mixed things about this. Some people love it, some people don't.
Well, it's kind of difficult to fall on either side with this one, because on one hand, you're going to have the proper monster enthusiasts, like the ones who actually keep a scorecard of who's beaten who in the giant monster battles. And Godzilla's always been this one, like the unbeatable. I mean, he's been beat like 3 or 4 times, but he's been seen as unbeatable.
Well, King Ghidorah beat him.
Pardon?
King Ghidorah beat him. When it was just Godzilla on his own, King Ghidorah beat him. Godzilla had to team up with Mothra, I think, to beat King Ghidorah. And after that, him and Mothra were like best buds. They had sleepovers and everything.
No, well, I don't know. Gamera got a bit ticked off and say anytime I think, because I watched Gamera 2, and this was a Digicon last year, and they had John Swayze as a guest, and John Swayze's Boy and the Beast.
So hang on. Are you saying Gamera was the one who basically, he was so annoyed that Mothra got to be best buds with Godzilla? He wanted to be best buds with Godzilla, and because he was annoyed, he went and built his own Godzilla, which was Mecha Godzilla, but Mecha Godzilla that went and turned wrong.
No. This has nothing to do with the review at the moment. I'm just going off a bit on my tangent.
That's exactly what we're doing. This is none of this is canon, but oh God, wouldn't it be great if it was?
It's just like a team drama. It's like Dawson's Creek were monsters.
Pictures took you. You might be able to get it done, man. You might make yourself a fortune.
I know the green light and everything, but attack the mick a bit. But like I said, John Swayze, he works over at Funimation. They got sent over a lot of things from Japan, like they say, like, oh, you can dub, but they bundle the deals in. And one of the things that got bundled in to be dubbed was Gamera 2.
Yeah.
And they dubbed it, but they dubbed it in a all Texas, like proper redneck dub of Gamera 2. It was a drama based around one of the main characters, and it was all centered around Uncle Stubby's tackle and bait shop.
Oh dear!
It's online somewhere.
I was going to put it up
on the Sunnycon YouTube, but I can't find the link to it.
It's kind of spectacular. I've seen bits of it, and I was just like, I was creasing up.
Oh, it's so. Oh, welcome, Uncle Stubby's tackle and bait. You're through Uncle Stubby himself.
imagine this, right? If somebody took, say, Ultraman, but then took the audio from Deliverance and applied it to Ultraman.
It is that epic. And this is like the English voice actors. Like, you've got big names like that are just dubbing this like monster movie, and it had me creased. Digicon, it was like a private showing. And there was like a contest to see how many what the F's are said. And apparently, I won it with a complete random guess. I still didn't get me prize. If you're listening, John, I still didn't get me prize for that. But not going to hold that against it.
Yes, John, WTF.
But that's when I think monster movies, it's Uncle Stubby's all the time. They also do Big Mother Truckers or something like that. I know that's a game as well, but. There's a one where there's a Japanese lass as a trucker. They got to dub that as well. I know that's out there somewhere. I can't remember the proper name of it, but I digress. Back onto Netflix version of Godzilla. And this one's, like I say, it's more updated. Basic premise is humanity has been driven from Earth because Godzilla's a twat and won't share it with us. And
sorry, Godzilla's a what?
Yeah, he's a twat.
He's a pregnant goldfish.
Well, that's up for debate as well later. it's amazing the amount of things that they pick up on in this Godzilla. It's like, well, yes, he's got his atomic breath attack and everything. He's like big, he's indestructible. But then it's like more of like a drama of how humanity's trying to deal with it. And one time they say like, oh, we'll go back to Earth. All the senior citizens leave the ship just to give like the young'uns a chance. Doesn't end well for them, but
the young'uns are the senior citizens
because they're sick of being in space.
And the young'uns are the senior citizens. It doesn't end well for.
Oh, the senior citizens. It's like imagine if we got every Brexit voter in a spaceship.
Christ.
No, but that aside, it's humanity's like sick of being in space. Before the first Godzilla attack, we actually made contact with alien life forms. And these aliens were like, oh, you know what? We'll help you like take out Godzilla if you just like convert to our religion. So it's like intergalactic Christianity in a way. Humanity go on then. You know, well, if you can help us get rid of Godzilla, we'll take you up on the offer. And it doesn't end well for them. Because Godzilla doesn't care if you're like a new species. He's going to take you down, whoever you are.
Does it end well for anybody?
Not really. Because you get this thing where humanity's off into space and that, and you know, people are disgruntled. The main people on the spaceship are withholding like major information, and they've got that old, if you can remember back to Gunbuster when we touched on the, I think it's the Henry Van Winkle effect.
The Rip Van Winkle effect.
Yeah, Rip Van. Who's Henry Van Winkle then? I was thinking Rob Van Winkle.
No. You basically, in your head, you went Rip Van Winkle, Henry Winkler, and mixed the two together.
That's probably it. It's this whole theory that, well, it's not a theory, it's actual science. If you were to leave Earth, that time would pass differently the further from Earth you get.
It's the, what was it? Not the Doppler effect, it's... I had the name for this the other day and I've forgotten it now. Damn it.
Professor Brian Cox does a mint demonstration on it. We're using like a torchlight and how wobbling up and down in a dark room on a chair.
Yeah.
It's somewhere. It's one of his TED Talks. He's an amazing scientist to begin with. But he'll explain this effect. And basically, humanity's went so far away from Earth and that to them, it's a couple of years to everyone on the spaceship. And when they've came back to Earth, it's like millennia have passed.
Yeah.
And time their hope dilation, is that it. Godzilla has died of old age.
Time dilation, that's what it was.
And that, well, they've gone back, they've made a plan to go back to Earth. Obviously, it's now habitable in some form, shape, or another. And then there's the whole posing questions, like, obviously, nature has retaken Earth, as it would. As we always seen them haunting things on the internet where it's like, what would happen if Earth took back, like if Earth was left uninhabited by humans, like after a month, you know, you've got trees growing in your bed. And
yeah, we've seen it loads.
That's happened. Some plants have evolved to live in a habitat where they live alongside Godzilla and they're not a threat. So Godzilla doesn't give a toss. So they get to live because they're too weak to challenge Godzilla. And as humanity goes back down to Earth, there's like this hope, like, oh, well, it's now habitable again. You know, yeah, Godzilla's probably dead. And then they find out, oh, Godzilla is alive and still kicking ass. And so it's a whole battle of humans versus Godzilla. And Godzilla's got the plated armor, like proper plated armor hide, which... practically impossible. I think the way they conceived to defeat him is using some kind of pulsar weapon, because Godzilla has regenerative abilities, and they use sound waves to detect when it self heals, and it does it in stages. So the thing is for them to drill this sonar spike up its jacksie, and then set off an internal explosion, which means that when it hardens its shell, it actually encases itself, ready to be just like exploded internally.
I've got to ask: was it Bruce Willis who delivered the final charge?
No. See, I was thinking that. I was like, "Oh, where's Ben Affleck? You've been cheeky to the show. Like, oh, I'm going to nail your daughter when you did it."
Was my ass.
But humanity has like this huge battle, and it's part one. There's going to be a part two. There's a huge twist at the end. Huge, gigantic, ginormous, big-ass twist at the end, and it's well worth watching.
I've got to ask... Okay, you just say yes or no. I'm not going to ask anymore. But the huge twist at the end, was it a bell ringing, and then they both have to go back to the corners?
No.
Right, damn it. Because when you said there's a part two, I was thinking, round two?
No. It's one of them things. It's what they usually do when you despair, kind of thing. It's like they finish it with despair. And it's a great twist at the end. And I can't wait to see what they do next, because there was this whole thing of like, well, Godzilla, does it have sex?
I think we'd know. The Earth would
ask
move.
Ask the fairies.
No, no, we would know. We would know if Godzilla had sex, because the Earth would literally move.
That's the thing. I mean, tallywhacker aside, it's one of them things to say, because they've assumed that it's a genetic, it's a one in the universe kind of thing. Like, you know, it's there's nothing else like it. It's evolved. It's an organism that's evolved itself. So can it recreate itself? Can it duplicate? There's lots of theories that are thrown around in the thing, and the ending kind of answers a few of them questions.
Yeah.
But I don't want to spoil it. But on the other hand, I kind of do, because it's been out for a while now. And if you haven't watched it,
don't spoil it. You know. I haven't seen it yet. I'm looking forward to it.
But I highly recommend to watch it. For me, the plot was great, because I'm not a buff of monster movies. I like watching them. Mm. I like the whole like people like overly grown sweaty men in form suits battle it with cheap props. That's you know, there's some kind of like. And see, like the CG that they use in the animation is great. It's very reminiscent of Knights of Cydonia,
yeah,
with that kind of art style. Voice acting, it's up to standard. I can't really say more, because it's the Japanese dub. And it was definitely entertaining. And the fact that they brought it out in like a movie form. Like a theatrical movie form, it's great, and I suggest people watch it. I wouldn't say I've got any gripes about it, to be honest.
That's fine.
It's pretty fulfilling. There's a lot of like, it makes you think, because yeah. Like say there'll be them monster movie buffs who are like, oh well, Godzilla's this, Godzilla's got these stats and that stats and whatnot.
Yeah, forget about that. And this is Godzilla. This is old man Godzilla. He's telling the humans to get off his lawn.
Yeah, kind of. Well, is that going to be the title, Old Man Godzilla?
Yeah.
And he's Miracle Tallywhacker.
No.
I think that is a very, very good title.
It's better than Godzilla's sonar butt plug.
Yes, it is. although Old Man Godzilla's rectal exam was a close second.
Well, to anyone listening, like if you haven't watched it yet, it's on Netflix. Get yourselves on and watch it, because it's good for anybody who's starting out watching monster movies. Sure, they've had like the big Hollywood like makeover night, and you've got Bryan Cranston like rubbing the eggs or what have you. But this is, forget everything you know about them. If you started off watching monster movies or just watching monster features like this, watch it from here. It's easy to get into. It's pretty simple to follow. It's a great premise. It's the whole, oh, humanity's driven away, but we'll fight back because we are humanity. I mean, not in this day and age. We'll probably sit around and, like, you know, if we can't win the battle in 10 seconds, then we'll just give up.
Yes. Anyway, leaving the manatees that are called Hugh to one side. Moving on to Andrew, who's got...
Right.
You've got muscles for us, haven't you?
Lots of muscles. Yeah. Right. This is... Dragon Ball, and more specifically, the Dragon Ball movies.
Yeah, Dragon Ball. Which movie collection is it?
Dragon Ball movies is they're very confusing, because they were not released in chronological order. They've been re-released and redubbed about 3-4 times over the last 20 years.
But yeah, this is the manga release, though, isn't it? Which is, I think they've reordered them for the release, so you're doing movie collection 1, aren't you?
Yeah, which is Dragon Ball Z Dead Zone and Dragon Ball Z The World's Strongest.
Okay.
First off, I'll start with Dead Zone. Now, Dead Zone's only... it's a short movie. It's basically about 2 episodes, you know, spliced together. But it's
That's not a movie. That's an OVA.
Essentially, yes. But, like, they call them movies.
It's a movie.
this one was first released in 1989.
Okay.
I don't know when it made its way over here originally, because it took us ages to actually find this one originally, because I've seen it multiple times over the years, and I've seen... the unfortunate thing is, when I first seen the dubs of these, this is what you call the big green dubs. The big green dubs is where they're just absolutely atrocious. Like this is early days of localization. So when it comes to these sorts of things, especially when it comes to Dragon Ball, where they change a lot of the names, they change a lot of the terminology that are used, and the voices are just like a very gruff and buff sort of Americanized sort of things. But they've done a very faithful adaptations as of late when it comes to, you know, these releases.
Okay.
So it's worth watching now.
All right, okay. So what's the Dead Zone about then?
Obviously, the Dragon Ball trope is that, you know, heroes versus villains, like, you know, there's a threat that arises and they must band together to heroically destroy the villain, like a big fight of muscles and stuff. That isn't very different here. But what the thing of this is against an old enemy called Garlic Jr. Now, Garlic Jr. is it's hard to explain who he is because apparently they had some sort of a... Well, what the story is that Garlic Jr., his father was imprisoned by Kami, which is like the overlooker, the protector, the god. He was Garlic Jr.'s father was imprisoned by Kami in something called the Dead Zone, which is the Realm of Darkness.
Yeah.
Now, Garlic Jr. has like saying, you know what? I'm going to get revenge. So at the start of the movie, he kidnaps Gohan, which is Goku's son. Kidnaps Gohan, gets the Dragon Ball's wishes for eternal life, immortality. Oh no, how does it someone doesn't die? You kill him anyways. That's what the odd thing is about this and that, is that they have to figure a way to beat them. But the particular thing is that with this being the very, very first Dragon Ball movie, this is the first chronologically as well.
All right.
Yeah.
For the Dragon Ball Z series, there was obviously Dragon Ball movies and...
Yeah. Because obviously in that, there's a couple of Dragon Ball movies. This is the first Dragon Ball Z movie. Except just after the appearance of Raditz. No, actually, I think it's before Raditz.
Yeah, just before.
Yeah. Okay. So this is... it's a bit of a weird one. This is what we call within the likes of the Dragon Ball fandom, like, they're obviously non-canon, because the chronology of the Dragon Ball movies is very confusing. So if you try to line them up what's happening in the actual series, that it can get very confusing. How's he still alive? Why isn't he dead? Who the hell is that? Where did he come from? So, you're not supposed to ask those questions, because you'll just get yourself in for a big mind-boggling. And that's not very good. So the thing is, that with this first movie, and that is that Goku and Piccolo, who at the end of Dragon Ball, were essentially enemies. They have to team up and find a way to defeat Garlic Jr. together. Now, as that's essentially the plot of the film. That's they're fighting against him and that, and they just can't seem to beat him because he's immortal. But what's a trope that's used, especially in the early Dragon Ball? Well, for Dragon Ball, most of all, is Gohan's hidden potential, his hidden power. Now, Gohan gets very, very angry and opens up a hole, a crack in dimension between this world and the Dead Zone, and Garlic Jr. gets sucked into the Dead Zone. It's like a Deus Ex Machina. It's what you call an ass pull. It's like Gohan suddenly out of nowhere. This kid has the power to open up a tear in dimensions and send the villain into the zone, and the crack in dimensions magically heals itself.
All right.
It's a shonen thing. It's a Dragon Ball. They do this stuff all the time. It's just a lot of fun. Now, this the second movie, The World's Strongest. This one's sort of good one. It's mainly because this is one of the only movies last time before the whole Super Saiyan thing.
Yeah.
So it kind of focused on the whole, like, Goku and the Kaioken. So, like, it focused on the fact that he's not that much stronger than the people around him. He's not just suddenly written to be, like, a Deus Ex Machina, a walking Deus Ex Machina, which is the problem that I have sometimes with a lot of these shonen protagonists, and that is the kind of outshine the side characters. But this movie, The World's Strongest, and that a lot of the side characters do get an opportunity to shine, and that's why I like this one in particular.
All right.
So it starts off like Gohan and Oolong searching for the Dragon Balls in, you know, the snowy mountains, a place where the ice never melts. Now, Oolong hasn't told Gohan about his plans, that he's just going to wish for underwear, ladies' underwear, which is a Dragon Ball reference. Because one of the original, I think it was the very first wish that they made in Dragon Ball, and that is Oolong just dives in before Emperor Pilaf can make his wish and just wish for comfort in the pale lady's underwear.
Yep.
So Shenron's summoned, but it's not summoned by them. It's summoned by someone called Dr. Cochin, which is for his laboratory, which is sealed beneath the ice, and his boss to be unsealed for the ice to be forward by the Eternal Dragon. So, you know, gets access to his evil laboratory. You know, he does his things and that, and creates a biomechanical body for his boss, which is Dr. Wheelo. And what he wants to do is he wants to gather the world's strongest warriors and make them aware that they are no match for his boss, which is this Dr. Wheelo. So, after the ice and that is melted, and that a couple of biomen show up, Knockout Gohan, Knockout Oolong, and Piccolo turns up and takes him away. The scene shifts, and that the Master Roshi's Island, everyone's there. These biomen turn up saying, "Roshi, you're the strongest in the world. You will come with us," such, such. Now, eventually, this turns into a chain of events where everyone gets wind of what's happening. They all gather up, they all meet up at this secret evil laboratory of doom to fight this boss, is Dr. Wheelo. And there's a lot of good choreography in this one. Like, this is one of the reasons why I do like some of the Dragon Ball movies, is a lot of the action scenes are a bit more well played out than it is throughout the actual series, which is something that kind of got overlooked as Dragon Ball Z went on. Is it turned less into like a martial arts fist fight sort of thing, and more into like beams flying everywhere and aspels. So, as I was saying, there's some good choreography and that, good fights and that, and obviously, and that the hero wins at the end of the day, because that's the whole point of like these sorts of things. It's the whole thing of the trope, the genre of shonen. It's like, you know, oh no, the hero has to overcome this great evil. However, will he do it? Yeah. So, as they're fighting on the gnat, they're having a bit of a hard time. So as it goes on the gnat, they're fighting the evil boss and that, thinking, oh, however will we do this? So Goku, Master Roshi and Krillin. Goku and Krillin are at this point in time students of Master Roshi. So they get together and fire like a master student Kamehameha. And Goku then goes into Kaioken times 3. He starts to damage Wheelo, and there's like a big beam struggle.
Okay.
Now, this is reminiscent of the first fight in Dragon Ball Z between Goku and Vegeta, because as the beam struggle is going on, Dr. Wheelo is like pushing forward, is about to defeat him. Now, Goku activates the Kaioken times 4, and he gets a boost that he needs to shoot Wheelo into space.
All right. Okay.
But Wheelo then decides to destroy the Earth from space, so what Goku does is he decides to form a spirit bomb. Now, the spirit bomb is one of the things that's annoyed me in the English translation, because it's only been recently that I've learned that spirit bomb is just something that's been pulled out of nowhere. And it's kind of like, I think of, why did they do that? But early 90s, mid-90s, they didn't take care of these things quite often. Now, he forms a spirit bomb.
Yeah.
And throws it towards this villain, the evil villain, the big baddie. He throws it, and towards the this doctor, this big baddie, is using to, you know, fire at the air and try to destroy it. So he throws the spirit bomb, kills the evil guy, boom, heroes win. But all in all, and that is, if you can overlook a lot of these simple and the irritating things about Dragon Ball Z, with these, especially with the movies.
Yeah.
Movies are very silly and have a lot of those stereotypical cliches when it comes to not just Dragon Ball Z in general, but shonen in general. If you can look past the silliness and just enjoy the good fights and choreography rather than the over convoluted plots that actually make no sense chronologically in the timeline of Dragon Ball, if you can look past all that and some of the you know, chronology mistakes as well, if you can look past all that and just enjoy it for what it is, which is like Dragon Ball content, good fights, you see your characters on the screen again, they're definitely worth watching. But now that we have the luxury to enjoy these localized, you know, properly localized rather than just like hired off to a third party studio and just not done very well because no one has an idea what they're doing.
Yeah, but we live in the modern age now.
Yeah, that's exactly it. We live in the modern age now that people realize the potential of Dragon Ball Z and how successful it's been. That's why they went back to it over the years to do this again. That's why I did it with Dragon Ball Z Kai.
All right.
That was a total re-recording, redubbing, yeah. And
I know.
Such.
I know. All right, okay. So, Are they both recommend movies from you then, Andrew?
They're both recommended, but like when it comes to the whole, like, you know, there's a lot of Dragon Ball Z movies. They're good, but there are better movies when it comes to the whole Dragon Ball series. But if you want to watch everything that is Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z, just watch them. There are some very enjoyable parts. Like, I personally, they're not my favourite movies when it comes to the Dragon Ball Z series, but yeah, at the same time, it's just good to watch and like some of them that when it comes to you're watching them, especially some of the fighting the villains, and that you just like to compare it with some of like some pop culture stuff. Like I was watching the Garlic Jr. movie the other day, and like just how cliche of a villain he was. It just made us think of like a broken Matt Hardy.
Okay. I can actually see that. Aye.
Yeah,
it's like Garlic Jr. and like you can just see him going delightful, delete. It kind of is a little bit off-putting, but hilarious at the same time. But Will Strong is something that's been done by Team 4-Star as well, and they did, I don't know how to word this politely, they did take the mick out of the cliches quite a bit that I've pointed out. Garlic Jr. hasn't been done by Team 4-Star before, so that's why I was making the references to the broken Matt Hardy. But they are, as you said, enjoyable. I do recommend them. I mean, there's not much else to say apart from that. Whenever you're going to watch this movie now, you're just going to pick up Garlic Jr. as a broken Matt Hardy.
It's not changing for me.
Yeah.
I mean, from what I can remember of watching them, I remember because it was the Ocean dub.
Yeah.
When they brought them out. And the Ocean dub was... It's one of the things where you get used to something. It's like you get used to the Queen talking a certain way, and if all of a sudden she talked with like a Geordie accent, everyone would be like, no, what's wrong?
That's essentially it. But even then, when in the early days of Funimation, that with like 3-4 different voice actors for this one character that changed like every couple of episodes, I didn't notice it back then.
I mean, the fandoms took them to the heart because the Ocean Dub guys go to conventions and they get like, you know, people want the other Goku. I can't remember the guy who voiced him, but
Peter,
you know,
Calamus. Peter Calamus. Yeah.
They want his signature just as much as they want Schemmel's. And I mean, it's a testament to them as voice actors. I know Schemmel's a bit protective over being like the only Goku, and I think he's got some kind of Highlander thing going on as well.
He does. Like, he's backed off a little bit because they did resolve that.
Yeah, but that's I mean, when you watch these old movies, I mean, they're being brought out by Manga Yuki, aren't they? So
yes, that's right.
That's because they've re-released they've started releasing Super on DVD, and Dragon Ball has become unprofitable again, I suppose.
It has, yeah, and that's, you know, as I was saying before, I think that's probably why Super's going to come back after this movie that's been done in December.
Oh, it definitely will. I mean, the latest episode, I mean, he's fighting Jiren in the Tournament of Power. Now, mm-hmm. I'm not that invested in it, but when I saw that Crunchyroll servers actually crashed because of the sheer volume, it's like that. It is really popular. I know Rob's a bit salty about it and everything, but you can't deny like the popularity has actually stuck
with it. I'm not denying the popularity. I'm just sick to death of it. I mean, it's Dragon Ball this and Dragon Ball that and Dragon Ball the other, and now Dragon Ball Super has nicked the story from Bakurano and applied it to Dragon Ball Z, and everyone's suddenly going, oh, it's so new and innovative, and I'm going, no, it well isn't.
It's not new and innovative, but I still enjoy it anyways for what it is. Look, but a lot of people do overlook that, you know, it's
All I'm saying is Dragon Ball shouldn't be treated as something that you would class as, say, high art. Or a high form of the anime medium, right? Of the animated medium.
I totally agree.
Dragon Ball, if you enjoy it, great. Fair play to you. Just don't shove your enjoyment in my face. You know, take your enjoyment and you know, windmill in front of me with your enjoyment.
So basically you're saying Dragon Ball fans to anime are what vegans are to humanity.
Yes. Yes, and that's why they like something like One Punch Man so much, because One Punch Man, but it literally is. When you were doing the webcomic for One Punch Man, it was just you. It was great. As soon as you got Yusuke Murata on board and they were doing the redraws, you've reached this plateau. One Punch Man is like half and half.
Yeah, I mean, one of the reasons that I did enjoy One Punch Man initially was just how lightly it parodied and referenced a lot of like tropes and cliches of the whole shonen thing. Then it became people start actually taking the two seriously.
Yeah, that's what happened with Dragon Ball. How many Dragon Ball Z fans have actually watched the original Dragon Ball?
I don't think that many. I mean, when I first watched it when I first aired here,
and that's my point, right? I will say to all of you Dragon Ball fans, you're not a real Dragon Ball fan until you've watched the original Dragon Ball.
I highly recommend
it. I put my foot down. The foot has spoken. Done. Mm-hmm. You're not a real Dragon Ball fan. Doesn't matter how much merchandise you have. Doesn't matter how many episodes of Dragon Ball Z you've watched. How many marathons you've done. Doesn't matter how big your Goku t-shirt or your Vegeta t-shirt. How many times you say over 9,000 in your life. None of that matters. If you haven't watched the original Dragon Ball series,
I highly recommend it. It's like it's one of the things that just must be done.
Aside from the aside from the weirdness with Kid Goku, you know the weird thing, like you know she doesn't look like me. Where's her thing gone?
Pat test.
Yeah, the pat test, right?
I like the accuracy of that because that's the curiosity of a child.
Yeah,
just the child by happens to be like more powerful and the most roided up bodybuilder in the world.
Yeah. Not just that, he was very sheltered the way he was really
yeah, he didn't understand that there were boys and girls because he's only had boys around him since he was a baby. So as far as he's concerned, there are only boys in the world. So when he first encounters a girl, he's like, you're weird, I don't understand, what's going on?
That's exactly it. I think, like, similar on the sort of the lines of, like, when it comes to these movies and that I was on about, I think one of the big advantages with them being re-released and redone, it introduces, like, you know, this newer, younger generation to, you know, that's is invested in Dragon Ball Super. It introduces, like, a new generation to the same Dragon Ball Z that I grew up with.
I'm going to play devil's advocate here. In fact, no, I'm going to outright disagree with you. It's not introducing a new generation. It's reintroducing the old generation of fans of Dragon Ball to more Dragon Ball, and they, by extension, are encouraging the new generation, which is
I disagree with you there. Overall, it's marketing.
Yeah.
It's the thing. It's making money in Japan and around the world again. And we're seeing the like Dragon Ball Super getting so much traction because people, you know, it's like you say, there is a part where the old fans are getting the new fans involved.
Yeah.
But they are marketing more to the new fans.
Hang
now.
On. Are you then saying that all three of us are right?
Well, in a roundabout way, we all are. But it's
how marketing works.
The way Funimation's done it, I mean, hats off to them. They're going to make an absolute ton of money. I mean, for casual fans of anime who aren't like, we're not like ones who stick to the big three, like, you know, that kind of formula where ones will, you know, if there's a, like, you know, lucky button, you'll press the random lucky button wherever it ends up. I mean, even if you have to, like, destroy your hard drive in the river. So it's one of those things that
Was that a slime reference there?
There's more than just the slime manga where he's like, destroy my hard drive.
Drop it in a bathtub.
But it's one of those things now that the wise to the kind of money that they can pull in, and they've tightened up like copyright and whatnot. We all know about like the whole back and forth between Toei Animation and Team 4-Star. And the thing is, like, From that point of view, it's like they really just want to make money out of it, and it's kind of like it's cynical, it's cold, it's corporate. You're not getting the fans involved. They have proven beyond doubt that they are only caring about the money. Where Funimation, like the American side of it, they've been engaging the fans. I mean, Sonny Strait was on Twitter just today when the servers went down. He says, "Let's see if we can get hashtag Dragon Ball Super trending." Because they're really invested in it, like the voice actors, the production team, all of the English side. That they're really.
I'm going to be cynical about this, right? I'm going to be really cynical about this.
Go on then.
I'm not surprised the voice actors are involved in this because it pays their wages.
There is money for them as well.
Yeah, it pays their wages.
It is. They'll get the convention appearances. They'll get invited around the world. You know. the movies, they're making money, they're coming around to it, new fans are getting in on it. You know, the popularity's there with Dragon Ball.
Yeah.
And these DVD releases of the old movies are just cashing in on it. I mean,
yeah,
you know, it is money making. Personally, I think the movies are a bit naff, but that's, you know, that's my personal opinion. Andrew likes them, he'd recommend them.
Yeah, so I do kind of recommend them. They're not exactly fantastic or innovative, but it's mindless fun.
Yeah.
And a lot of people do find some of the villains in some of the movies entertaining, and that's why Broly is just, everyone just absolutely adores him, to the point where there is a character in Dragon Ball Super heavily based on Broly.
Right, okay, so that's your lot for this week then. We'll be back next week with hopefully less Dragon Ball. Please let me have an episode of this where we don't talk about bloody Dragon Ball.
It's the final episode next week.
I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll give you a review of the next in the Digimon Tri movie series. That'll cheer you up.
Oh God!
I still need to watch them.
If it's not Dragon Ball,
if you go back a few shows, listen to the first movie review.
This is what I have to put up with, folks. If it's not Dragon Ball, it's Pokemon. If it's not Pokemon, it's Digimon.
Just filthy casuals everywhere.
I'm surrounded by casuals. Oh, anyway, that's your lot for this week. We're out of here. You can listen to all of our other shows on Audio Boom and Apple Podcasts. We've got a Patreon. The links to everything are on our website. Show your support with the Patreon. Get your wallets out and give us some cash so we can keep doing this. You know, if you like it, then, you know, support us.
We also have a Twitter at Keyframe Podcast.
Yes, we
do.
I'd
fill in for Mark Wyler.
Or you can find us on Facebook or email us, studio@thegeekshow.co.uk. That's it. We're done. We're out of here. We're going to have coffee and cake and stuff like that. We'll see you next week. Till then, I've been Rob.
I've been Andrew.
I've been Tucky.
See you later.
Bye.
So what kind of cake we're having? Because I'm going for lemon drizzle.